wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That we are, and we are joined this week by our expert, Professor Alan Blackman. Why are you laughing over there?
Every time you say that word, I just have to laugh. But
yeah. What, expert?
Anyway, yes. That's
but you are our expert.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
I mean, you're definitely the expert in this situation because I know absolutely nothing about chemistry or essentially what uranium-235 is, but I've heard it's quite big. It's a big moment.
Well, indeed it is. And we're sort of departing from the usual structure of Dear Science today, where we normally do three stories, but I figured that, you know, last week, or the last couple of weeks or whatever, when certain people have been sort of bombing the crap out of certain places to stop them gaining nuclear weapons and everything, and this thing, uranium-235, cropped up quite a bit. So I thought, let's dedicate the whole show to a little bit of a discussion about what this exactly is and why it's so damn important.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely.
So in order to do that, we have to start at the very beginning.
Yes, please do.
Which, as Julie Andrews once said, is a very good place to start. If you get that
I don't
reference.
Get that.
Oh, God, you're Look. So young, Joe. You're so young.
I probably
Dear
should get
God.
It.
You've never seen The Sound of Music. Come on.
I've never seen The Sound of Music. I know what you're talking about, at least, when you say The Sound of Music. I'm not that young. Actually, it's funny. In my first year of university back in 2020, I did have a professor ask me if we knew what 9/11 was, which is quite interesting.
Oh, sheesh. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, just wanted to drop that out there. But anyway, you carry
right.
on.
Okay. So let's kick off. We're going to talk about uranium today, and in particular uranium-235. And what does this 235 mean? Hopefully by the end of this, you'll have a little bit of a gleaning as to what it's all about. So uranium itself is a metal. It's element number 92 on the periodic table, and it was discovered in 1789, way back when, by a German chemist by the name of Martin Klaproth, and he discovered essentially the mineral pitch blend, okay, which those of you who know anything about the Curies might have heard of, possibly. But in chemical terms, it's a compound called uranium dioxide, okay? So the actual metal itself, uranium metal, wasn't isolated pure until 1841. And people didn't sort of see anything unusual about anything to do with uranium at the time. However, in 1896, Louis Becquerel, who was a French chemist, he sort of really changed the world with his discovery. And his discovery was radioactivity.
Mm.
And we all have heard the word radioactivity. We possibly might not really understand what it's all about. And so here comes the lesson. Okay. And what Becquerel did, it was totally by accident. X-rays had been discovered the year before, 1895. And so these rays thing were all a big deal. You know, people were trying to find out what else would give off these rays, okay? And so Becquerel was doing some experiments with photographic plates and covering them in black paper and then putting things on them and seeing if they left an image on the photographic plate as a result of these so-called rays.
Mm.
And his idea was that if you expose these things to the sun, they'd gain energy from the sun, you put them on this photographic plate, and then they'll transfer that energy and make an image in themselves and blah, blah, blah. But it was foggy in Paris one weekend. That he was going to do this particular experiment. And so he didn't expose these things to the sun. He just left them sitting on a plate in a desk drawer or something over the weekend, came back after the weekend and found that there was an image on the plate. And he thought, oh, hang on, what's going on here? I didn't expose these things to the sun. Where have these rays come from? And it just so happened that the thing that he left on the plate were uranium salts.
Right, right.
And so he eventually figured out that uranium must be giving out some sort of radiation somehow that would cause a fog on a photographic plate. And that was the start of radioactivity, okay? And so one of the first people in the radioactivity study area were the Curies, so Pierre and Marie. And so they eventually ended up winning the Nobel Prize for their studies of radioactivity. And, of course, they famously isolated both radium and polonium, which were other radioactive metals. And then also on the deal here was Ernest Rutherford. So there's our Kiwi connection. He won the Nobel Prize in 1908 in chemistry, not for splitting the atom, which he never actually did, but for explaining what radioactivity was. And he said that radioactivity was, in fact, the atom falling apart. Okay? Now, the actual word atom comes from the Greek for not cut or indivisible.
Right.
People had thought that atoms were the smallest possible states of matter, you know, that everything was built up from. Rutherford showed that wasn't true, and Rutherford showed that the atom could, in fact, disintegrate. Okay? And what Rutherford also showed that the atom was made up of a positively charged middle, which he called the nucleus, and the electrons sort of floating around. And the nucleus is a really important part of the story, because this is where all the whole radioactivity bit comes from. So we have this nucleus, it's positively charged. Rutherford showed that it contained very, very, very small particles called protons that had the positive charge. And then later, although Rutherford foresaw it, he showed that the nucleus also contained these things called neutrons, which are about the same size as a proton, but they're neutral. Okay, so no charge at all. Right, so why is this so important? Well, elements are elements because of the number of protons in their nucleus. Hopefully you're staying with me here, everybody, okay? So every hydrogen atom in the universe has got one proton in its nucleus. Every chlorine atom in the universe has got 17 protons in its nucleus. Every uranium atom in the universe has got 92 protons in its nucleus, okay? So the number of protons in the nucleus determines the identity of the atom, essentially. And we know of 118 different types of atoms at the moment. And obviously that goes all the way from hydrogen, which has one, two, God, what's 118? Tennessinium or no, moscovium or something. Anyway, 118 protons in the nucleus. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Now, if we study hydrogen very, very carefully, we'll find that all of the hydrogen atoms in the universe aren't exactly the same. So roughly one in about 6,000 hydrogen atoms has twice the mass of a normal hydrogen atom. And those hydrogen atoms contain one proton and one neutron in the nucleus. Now, normal hydrogen atoms only got one proton in the nucleus, no neutrons.
Mm.
Okay? So these different forms of hydrogen, this different form of hydrogen that occurs one in 6,000 atoms, we call deuterium. Okay? Now, it behaves pretty similarly to hydrogen. Pretty much, it's still hydrogen because it's still got one proton in the nucleus, but it's got that extra neutron that makes it heavier.
Mm.
And we call this an isotope, okay, which, again, is a word that you might be familiar with, you may have heard in the media, okay? So isotopes are atoms that have got the same number of protons but different numbers of neutrons in the nucleus, okay? And so there's a whole heap of different isotopes out there. Now, we're talking about uranium, and uranium just happens to have three naturally occurring isotopes, okay? Now, as I said before, all uranium atoms have got 92 protons in the nucleus, okay? We have uranium atoms that have different numbers of neutrons in the nucleus, though. So we've got three isotopes. We've got what we call uranium-238, okay? We've got uranium-235, and we've got uranium-234. And so they have all got different numbers of neutrons in the nucleus. So those are three isotopes of uranium. Now, uranium-238, boring, pretty dull. It's radioactive, okay? All of these forms of uranium are radioactive. That's an important thing, okay? So in other words, they are going to be decaying naturally, okay? That's a natural process. You can't stop it, okay? And so we've got uranium-238, which makes up, of all the uranium on the planet, makes up about 99.3%. We've got uranium-235, ding ding, which makes out about 0.7% of all the uranium on the planet. And you've got uranium-234, which is in trace amounts. So we don't really worry about that, okay? Mm. Now, as I said, they're all radioactive and they all decay. And eventually, if you leave them long enough, and by long enough, we're talking 10 to the 5 years, 10 to the 8 years, and 10 to the 9 years for those three isotopes. So like a billion years for uranium-238, half of it will have turned into something else. And eventually you leave it long enough, they all end up as lead. Okay? And they all stop at lead. So that's your natural radioactive decay process. However, uranium-235 is special because it is what's called a fissile nucleus. And that means that we can actually induce breakage of the nucleus.
Right.
Okay. And in so doing, we release a buttload of energy. Okay. Unimaginable amounts of energy as a result of fission of the uranium nucleus. And this only happens for uranium-235. And the way that we can induce this fission is to hit it with neutrons.
Mm.
Okay. And so these neutrons have to be traveling at a particular speed. Too fast and they just sort of go straight through and they don't interact. Too slow, they don't sort of interact at all. You've got to get it just right. Okay. And then if you hit them with these neutrons of these particular speed and energy, then the nucleus breaks apart and it forms a bunch of much lighter elements. It can break into two, it can break into three. But really critically, and no pun intended, what also happens there is that neutrons, a couple of neutrons get emitted in that process as well. And those neutrons, if they're traveling at the right speed, they can then hit a neighboring 235 nucleus and they can cause that to split with the ejection of a couple of neutrons and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we have a chain reaction, which again is an integral part of this whole sort of nuclear weapons things. We talk about chain reactions.
Yeah.
And the chain reaction just happens really, 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 really fast. And you're getting an enormous amount of energy, liberated in a very, very short time span. And bam, there's essentially your nuclear weapon.
Mm.
Okay. Now, so uranium-235 is basically the only naturally occurring isotope that does this, that is present in any great extent.
Mm.
Okay. Now, you might not think that 0.7% of all the uranium is any great extent, and you're right, it's not a heck of a lot. So what they have to do in order to make this useful, okay, you can't just take sort of natural uranium and pick out the uranium-235. That's you just can't do that. You've got this mixture of the uranium isotopes. And just treating that with neutrons doesn't get you anywhere. You need a certain enrichment level. You need to get the 235 content up from 0.7% up to around about 3.5% if you want to use this uranium for nuclear power.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
So around about 3.5% enrichment is what you need for nuclear power. So, and we know all about nuclear power stations, okay? They're they're fairly safe except for when they're not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What you're doing is a controlled fission of the uranium nuclei there, okay? And it's all rigorously controlled, et cetera, et cetera. If it gets away on you, you know, probably the worst thing that's going to happen is you're going to have an explosion, not a nuclear explosion,
yeah,
per se. It's probably going to be hydrogen or something like that. It's, you know, big explosion, and you're going to liberate radioactive material as we saw in Fukushima.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But as, you know, you're not going to get a mushroom cloud, let's say.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's not going to happen. Now, in order to get a mushroom cloud, what you need is about 90% enrichment.
Okay.
So you need to take that 0.7% of uranium-235 and you need to enrich it to 90%.
Mm.
How the heck do you do that?
Yeah.
Right. So, getting back to the chemistry, uranium-238, so that's 99.3%, uranium-235, about 0.7%. Now, uranium-235 is about a percent and a half, so lighter than uranium-238, okay?
Yeah.
Now, if you've got gas molecules, heavier molecules travel more slowly than light molecules, okay? And so you can make use of that to separate the heavy molecules from the light molecules. And what they do is that they use a thing called a centrifuge, okay? And a centrifuge is just basically a big spinning arm, essentially.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay? And in a centrifuge, the heavier things are going to get thrown to the end of the centrifuge more rapidly than the light things, okay? So then the question is, how do we do this with uranium? How do we make use of this with uranium? We use a special compound of uranium called uranium hexafluoride, or UF6,
mm,
okay? And UF6 is a solid at room temperature, but you heat it to 50 degrees and it turns into a gas. And there you go. You've now got uranium hexafluoride. You've got the uranium-238 and 235 in now a gaseous form. And if you stick these in these centrifuges and spin them at around about 50 to 70,000 RPM, which is quite quick,
mm,
you're going to get a slight separation
mm
of the heavy from the light. It's not going to be perfect, but it's going to be slight. and then you that so you're going to be a little bit enriched, shall we say, and then you can take that enriched and you can throw it in another centrifuge and do it again and do it again and do it again, etc., etc., etc.
Okay. Yeah.
And eventually, if you keep doing that, then you're going to get up to whatever percent enrichment you want. The trouble is that this is seriously complicated kit, very, very complicated machinery, okay? And so this, I believe, is what was being targeted in the bombing of Iran with these centrifuges, okay, which were situated well below ground, seemingly. And this is what Iran was purportedly using to enrich their uranium, okay?
Yeah.
So that's basically the story. That's why uranium-235, the isotope, is so important, because it's the only isotope that you can use to make nuclear weapons. Now, that's not absolutely true, because you can also use uranium-238 and turn it into plutonium-239,
yeah,
which is also a fissile nucleus as well. So that does the same thing as uranium-235. But in terms of naturally occurring things, that's uranium-235 is your one, okay? So basically, you can take a ton of natural uranium, and if you want to make weapons-grade uranium out of that, you're going to get around about 5.6 kilos of weapons-grade uranium-235 out of that ton.
Right.
And to make a bomb, apparently you need around about, gosh, I think it was... I can't remember. I think it was about 16 kilos, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So you don't need a heck of a lot.
Yeah, but which it's is kind of concerning.
but it's the act of getting it. You know, it's an extraordinarily difficult thing to get.
Oh,
And the question then becomes, okay, so these centrifuges are highly, highly specialized pieces of equipment that will be made only by certain people on the planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Who gave Iran the centrifuges, okay? And I seem to recall many years ago as well, Libya also were ordering some centrifuges from somebody. Now, these are things that you think would be very, very, very carefully regulated and everything, hopefully by the UN or whatever, but, you know, because you don't want everyone having these, because they're an absolute necessity when it comes to enriching uranium. So,
That was a great lesson into everything. I feel like I just learned so much chemistry, and more chemistry I've learned than my entire schooling, to be honest with you.
So there will be a test.
Okay. I'll listen to the podcast, which is available on 95bfm.com after the show. But thank you very much, Professor Alan Blackman I've been taken aback. Thank you very much for coming on to the show.
Thank you, Motet.
And thank you, science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.